This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, grade it, change it, point it to me, press it, snap it,
Joy News.
Write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it.
Good afternoon, this is Joy94.9. You're listening to TechnoGaze, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets, and technology. My name is Mark. With me in the studio today is Michael, pushing buttons.
Hello there. I'll push my own button on, shall I?
Yes, that's always handy if we want to hear you. Also in the studio today, we have Donna.
Hello.
Hello, Donna. Welcome Hello. Back to the show for... Two times in 3 weeks.
I know, it's crazy.
Cray cray.
We may have to stop this.
Possibly. I'd like to say a quick hello to a new Facebook follower. Actually, we've got two Facebook followers recently, don't we?
We do.
Yes. One of whom, what was the first one?
First one is Vinon.
Vinon. Hello, Vinon.
Hope we've pronounced your name.
And another one who, because such a fabulous Joy volunteer, also a newly following Facebook follower. Is that the right? I don't know. Facebook friend of TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9, Jono Hayward. Hello.
Why, hello there.
We have invited you into the studio because you're a bit more special than... I shouldn't say that, should I?
We don't have more special or less special followers. All our followers are equally special.
Well, my mum says I'm special, so,
Now, in today's show, we'll be discussing Google News, no longer pointing to Spanish news sources. It's always been a bit of a battle, hasn't it, to get your, as a news site, to get yourself on or off Google News as you see fit.
Well, Spain managed to get everyone off.
All of them. A new app called Scissor. Or is that how you'd say it? I guess it is. Scissor. A new dating
Skizzer?
App. Skizzer?
Maybe. Scissor.
Scissor?
I think Scissor.
A new dating app for lesbians. We thought we'd bring that up. Some new developments with the National Broadband Network. There was a press conference with NBN Co, Telstra and Malcolm Turnbull, our communications minister, last Sunday. Very oddly timed, but...
Why was it oddly timed?
Well, Sunday. Why Sunday? You know, no tech journalist is working on a Sunday.
Maybe to make Monday papers, I don't know.
I doubt it. Anyway, we'll discuss later on some news around mobile coverage in the City Loop here in Melbourne. The Melbourne Underground Railway line, I think is the old term for it. We're still not getting it. Bad news.
Well, that's not news.
Sad news. The latest in, of course, it's been mentioned a few times this morning, both on Saturday Magazine before us and in the news just now. Sony Pictures has been hacked, if you haven't noticed. And we thought we'd sort of take a look at it in a technology sense. So stay tuned for that. And Bitcoin now being accepted by Microsoft.
Does that mean it's legitimate?
I think it's a perennial question, isn't it? The perennial question, is that the right term for
it?
Yes. It's one of
it keeps popping up regardless of if it dies 1 year and comes back. Perennial.
People, assuming people trade in it, I guess it's legitimate.
Yeah, well, it's been offered by many more suppliers, vendors, whatever you want to call
them. I've seen a Bitcoin ATM.
Like there is one in Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah, in the Emporium, yeah.
There's one in the Emporium?
Yep. So, yeah, if you've got your Bitcoin wallet, you can put some money onto it. The only thing that troubles me about Bitcoin is the fluctuating value of it.
It's a very volatile currency, yes.
It is.
Indeed.
Speculators are rife.
Yes. If you would like to contact us while we're in the studio here, you can do so by texting us. 0427JOY949 is always a good way to contact us in the studio.
Or you can tweet at us at Technogaze on Twitter, TechnoGaze.
You can email us on air at joy.org.au.
Or use the telephone, 1300-JOY949, and leave a message with the lovely Mushin.
Yes.
Who's sitting by the desk.
Waiting for your call.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, what's a telephone? I'm
just... You know that thing in your pocket?
Yeah, I use it for email. I didn't know you could talk on it.
No, God forbid you should talk to somebody in person. No.
Technological developments these days, who can keep up?
Right. Spanish news sites. They're suffering after being dropped by Google News.
Now, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks, where a new law was passed in Spain. And that law is becoming effective 1st of January. So I guess Google got in just before the Christmas rush and has blocked. Well, actually, it's taken down all of the links to newspapers in Spain.
Yes.
And instead put a little apology there.
Mm. So the law was saying, the new law came in as a result of Spanish publishers lobbying the government to do this, and that that Google should have, well, that any news aggregator should have to pay the publisher for that snippet of content, whether it be text or a thumbnail image or whatever, that they should have to pay the publisher for the privilege of publishing that information on the aggregation. Mm. And Google's response was, well, that's just not economic for us. We're not making money from Google News, so we're therefore going to just entirely shut down Google News in Spain.
And what happened to the traffic results?
Well, the traffic results have gone down, but
in sound effect form. Thank you, Donna.
Can you do that again? Actually, no, we'll get off the audio log and we'll put it as one of our special effects to use later on. You'll be immortalized forever, Donna.
Fabulous.
Immediately there was somewhere like a 10-15% drop in people coming from outside news sites into Spanish news sites, but there was about the same increase of people going from one news site to another news site. So it's like I may have gone from The Age to The Australian and then to The Herald Sun. Whereas before they would come in externally, presumably from Google's news link. So right now I think there's been a net change of very, very little.
I guess it's interesting. It's almost putting the news sites front and centre. Because when you have a desire to look for news on a particular item, what do? You might...
I go to abc.net.au.
Right, so you've got to...
/news.
You go to a trusted source.
Mm-hmm. I go to the trusted source as well.
Does anyone use Google News anymore to find out stuff?
Well, to be honest, I use it when I want to get a broader view of something that's going on.
Right.
Like, because it aggregates news from so many different sources, I'll go to a trusted source that I know and am familiar with. And then if I want to say, hey, I want to get different opinions here, then I'll usually go to Google News because it's going to pull in sources from a wider variety.
The right wing.
Well, not necessarily,
well,
but also international. Like, you know, when some kind of big event is going on, we get a particularly filtered view of it through our local media. But sometimes if you go and look at, you know, something maybe local, you may not necessarily understand all, you know, the language in it, but sometimes there's a different kind of slant there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also use it for immediacy. So if something is happening overseas, the local news may trail their reporting.
Yep.
Whereas I will go to if it's happening in the US, I will go to Google News US to have a look and see what's happening because it's a bit more up to date.
Yeah, because you get the links straight up, don't you, for whichever one came first, as in whichever news source came up with the goods first is the one that will be higher in the list.
It will be higher in the list, but I actually changed to the US Google News rather than the Australian Google News, just to see, because...
Well, you can't switch to the Spanish Google News anymore.
Well, you can, but you'll just get a little apology that says, sorry, guys, we're not allowed to bring you any content.
Ba-bong.
I do have one of those sound effects.
It's an interesting dilemma, though, because, like, Google themselves, like, the way that Google functions, you kind of put in a bubble, aren't you, when it comes to what is returned when you're searching for stuff in Google.
Because it gives you what you want to see, it filters for your preference.
So if you're trying to take on, you know, use Google for that, diversity, I guess, of source to obtain stuff from somewhere else, you may not actually get that by way of design, right? Like by the way that Google runs its business.
Well, certainly for the search engine site, that's the case. You get filtered results and tailored results of previous searches and things like that. I'm not so sure about the Google News site.
Right.
Because one of the things that Google did say is, you know, like Don said, they don't make any money out of it. So they don't have advertising on it.
Yeah.
It certainly increases their brand image
and
the power of their brand, but they don't put advertising on it. So they're not piggybacking directly off somebody else's hard work to get
Google may not
benefit.
Be making cash, but they're learning more about their users. So many of their users are logged in, you know, might be using Chrome and therefore being tracked in an, you know, in extra special ways. And, you know, they're logged into their Google accounts. And
absolutely
so
true.
All of that data then aggregates more information around that individual so that they can target even better ads at you in the future.
Yeah, they do get non-financial benefit, correct?
Mm.
Yeah.
Or non-direct financial benefit anyway.
Yes. Well, yeah,
which
I
is, of course, what everything Google does ever is aimed at.
It is their business model to know more, you know, to use data to, you know, do more and sell ads. That's how they make money.
Mm.
Which you can just get around with an ad blocker.
Mm. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Yes.
You're listening to Techno Gaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology, gadgets and consumer electronics. We'll do more of that in a few moments. Techno Gaze. You're listening to Techno Gaze. We like to talk about internets and stuff. We talk about technology.
The interwang.
What?
A friend of mine once told me that a Chinese colloquial name for the internet is the interwang.
That does not translate very well.
I love it. The interwang.
Speaking of,
add it to your lexicon.
Speaking of something which is absolutely like the other end of the spectrum completely, Skizza.
Scissor.
It's
SCISSR.
It's a new Tinder for lesbians. I would actually sort of want to suggest that it's actually the new Grindr for lesbians. Right?
Well, it has been promoted as a classier version of Grindr.
Oh, well,
that's
that
not
wouldn't
difficult.
Be hard. I said hard.
Oh, there are many puerile minds out there giggling to themselves.
And in what seems to be a trend for these types of apps is that they just you know, remove a random vowel from from the name to.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, apparently, like, Tinder will often throw up men as options, even though you may have put your preference as women. And so Scissor will completely not do that for you.
Maybe it will, fulfill on exactly what you want.
Be more accurate, perhaps, in your in delivering suggestions for based on your preferences.
Mm. So it's for lesbians, by lesbians, is the little snippet here.
Yep. And you'll be able to crush on other users.
You what?
Well, it's like a like, I think, is a crush.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and add people to a wish list.
Right.
And set preferences, whether you're interested in hookup, love and relationship, networking, or friendship.
Coming soon to iOS and Android users.
Yes, not out yet. Ooh. It's still vaporware.
Yes.
But another choice in the ever-growing market.
Well, isn't it interesting? It's almost like there's been a whole bunch of apps sort of tried to break into the non-gay male market for dating. I use the term dating apps very loosely, so to speak.
Depends on your definition of dating.
this one sounds like it's at least got the news in front of us, so we're talking about it.
Yeah.
They must have a marketing...
And the app certainly looks a lot much better designed just from these screenshots than the vast majority of the gay ones. So hopefully it's got that going for it.
I do like the way that they've given you the photographs. They're sort of in an oval with the bottom cut off, so it's a bit flatter. It just looks a little bit different and a little bit nicer.
Hmm.
It is very stylish.
Mm.
And, of course, filled with stock photos of very attractive women, you know, just because all these apps always are. It just leads you to disappointment when, you know, you look at the real thing and it's just, well, I don't know. With Grindr, of course, it's just torsos. What do women post?
Is it just torsos?
Yes.
You can't put nudity on the public pictures.
Ah, right.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. Hairstyles? Bangles? I don't know.
Who knows? Now, shall we move on?
Let us move on.
Please,
we
very quickly.
Commit any faux pas.
Yes.
NBN Co, Turnbull and Telstra.
Is that our new axis of evil?
I think we need to have a sound effect, which is kind of like that trumpet thing they play on Anzac Day, you know, the last reveal for the NBN, you know. I think 2014 was the year the NBN died. There you
How's
go.
That?
That'll do.
So the NBN, of course, had signed an $11 billion deal with Telstra to disconnect copper and HFC from its network. This is, of course, in the Labor version of the NBN.
I think I used some not safe for broadcast language when I heard about this, that Telstra has cooked up a fabulous deal at the expense of all of us, really, in that they were originally going to be paid to shut down the copper network and have it be replaced with fibre. And now what's happening is they're still being paid to lose ownership of the copper network. So the NBN Co will now own it. But Telstra's also going to get the extra bonus of being paid to maintain it.
Okay.
How does this work? How is this a win for us?
Right at this moment, if you look at the fine print, it says Telstra will be offered the chance to compete in to compete for the work of maintaining the network, which probably means they're a shoo-in, but right now might do it, and we don't know how much it's going to cost because, of course, no one said, this is what I want you to do and this is how much I'm going to pay.
Press conference. NBN co-head, you know, our federal communications minister and CEO of a corporate entity that used to be owned by the government but now is a privately owned company. They're already talking about, oh, yes, the expertise that is available in Telstra's ranks is quite high, and therefore, like, it's you're right, it's a shoo-in. It's like, it's just going to happen, you would suggest. Hopefully there is a competitive process, but NBN Co. being itself a company, how much visibility is there to the public on their processes?
But at the end of the day, if you want to talk about opening this up to competitive review, how many companies are there that currently maintain the copper network in Australia? Oh, one. So who is going to be more expert in this country than the one company that does it?
Yeah, well, you could argue that the people that are involved...
The thing is, it should be being ripped out and replaced with fibre, not being maintained ad nauseam, ad infinitum, to the end of time with this terrible, terrible technology which is keeping us all in the backwater.
Totally agree. And I hate to think, at the end of the day, when NBN is finally rolled out, how much of the existing copper is actually being replaced with new copper because the current copper is not going to serve purpose? And how much is the cost benefit or the savings in laying copper down for that last connection from the street into the house compared to actually pulling fibre through? Because I think, you know, it's nice on paper now, we're going to use copper, but in reality it's going to say, oh, well, the existing copper network isn't serviceable, is not going to give us the speeds that we want.
So you're waiting
for
the market
to... That's what NBN was going to do, right?
Yeah.
NBN was going to replace the copper with fibre.
Yes.
And now it's not.
That's right. And what I'm saying is that the current government is saying, oh, yeah, we're going to do cheap because we've been using existing copper, but I really don't think that they are.
Now, if you've got anything to say on this topic, you can do so. You can text us in 0427JOY949 or you can email us onair@joy.org.au. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Telstra, of course, are going to maintain the copper network, but still be paid the $11 billion. The agreement that's been reached is also covering Optus as well.
So that was interesting because in the original deal, Optus and Telstra were basically being paid to end of life their cable networks.
That's right.
And because it would be replaced with fibre. And it seems, I haven't actually gotten down into the detail of this, but it seems like in the new deal, Telstra and Optus are being both paid to sort of keep those cable networks as part of the new NBN. However, they mostly overlap, so they're not, you know, we're kind of like paying twice for something we only need half of something like that. Does anyone get more detail on that bit?
Diversity in some sense, like to be able to have different
choice.
Technologies is available to you is not such a bad thing. But when it comes to, I know which one I'd choose if I had fibre and even just HFC available to me, I think I'd probably go the fibre option.
I think with the duplicate coverage and paying twice for it, I think that is more of a commercial thing, because if you owned a business where you laid wire out on the street and there was another business who was your competitor, if the government went to your competitor and said, hey guys, I'm going to buy you out, and therefore, Donna, you lost all of your income because all of your consumers were going to use the government one, you'd say, hang on a minute, that's not fair. So I think that really you've got to look at that as the overall cost of doing this
as
project.
As a commercial reality, yeah, of
because otherwise, you know, it really isn't fair to somebody else out there who's invested in this hardware, in this infrastructure, to suddenly lose all of
their
customers.
Share. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes some sense.
So I think on that side, it probably is fair to
but
pay.
But it's still a something. Bad deal for us.
You could argue, though, that particularly in Telstra's case, they were given this massive customer base in the first place as a, you know, here you go on a platter, because they became a private entity from a government-owned monopoly.
Well, sorry, the government, we, as part of the government, received money from the raising of shares for that, however many billions of dollars it was. So it's, you know. Yeah.
Grossly undervalued. T1 was grossly undervalued. T2 was grossly overvalued. And it's only now somewhere, the share price is now somewhere between the two.
Two.
Yep. Now, while we're talking about connectivity and such related issues, the Melbourne Underground Railway Line, of course, otherwise known as the City Loop here in Melbourne.
Of doom. If you would like to continue using your phone.
I don't understand why it's called the loop, because the train doesn't go around in circles.
Some points in the mornings.
They've just got one that just goes in circles?
There's one that goes around. Oh. But they, traditionally, there used to be. Just a circular loop one that went along the Clifton Hill platform one part of it. Anyway.
We're digressing, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
As we've done.
So there's been talk, and we've mentioned this before, Victorian government, along with the government-owned entity VicTrack, have been talking about introducing mobile coverage to the City Loop for quite some time. There was an announcement earlier in the year, I think back in July, roughly, that this coverage would be imminent, that 3G coverage would be deployed. I think it was part of the Victorian government of the day trying to seem that they were delivering on things that needed to be delivered on.
So part of the reason for this is that there's some concern that 3G or 4G may interfere with the signalling frequencies used by the train system.
So, yes, just this week, a release has been made by VicTrack saying, actually, we're postponing the network because all of a sudden they've realised that there's a possibility that the digital communication system that train drivers use to talk to each other that is in place already maybe interfered with by 3G coverage.
Is this like interference on aeroplanes?
Good point.
Well, today you have got hundreds of devices out there in the trains madly looking for signal and obviously doing some sort of broadcast on that on frequencies.
Yep.
So what's the difference going to be?
Maybe it could also
the
be
power
the infrastructure.
Transmitter?
It could be the infrastructure that's in place to enable the communication inside the loop. Like
maybe
I imagine
they don't have security. Maybe they don't have appropriate security measures on their digital network. So that's the concern, rather than it, because you know this is a solved problem in an awful lot of places.
That's right.
But perhaps there's something. It'd be interesting to find out. Who could we ask? Who would know?
Who would tell
listeners,
us?
Listeners, does anyone have any inside info that you can share with us?
Any whistleblowers?
What the real reason is? Yes, whistleblowers, come to us.
So the latest, of course, is that 3G coverage is now going to be expected in the second quarter of 2015. I presume that means between April and June of 2015.
An Easter present, perhaps?
Yeah, possibly. And 4G coverage isn't expected until the second quarter of 2016.
What's the difference between putting a 3G transmitter in place or a 4G transmitter? If you're already there.
Cost.
But they're doing it anyway.
But surely the telcos would be like down there in like Flynn if they could.
Probably. What I want to know is, I mean, I'm no physicist, but clearly these 3G and 4G signals are operating in and around the trains that go above ground and they're not interfering with anything there. So what's the difference?
Right.
I see. Okay, I'm going to pick you up on that. I think there's got something to do with the infrastructure that's required, because I imagine for this coverage to be implemented, there'd be some sort of wire or something that spans along the length of the track, which there may already be some of that in place for this digital system that's running for the train drivers.
Yeah, but wouldn't they also have that for the above ground trains?
Yeah, but it might not be as centralized. It might not be as what's the word? Condensed as sure.
So they're a lot more restricted in where they can put this, any sort of cabling.
Yeah, if they've got two transmitters sitting right next to each other that are, you know, quite strong, they might be more.
And I guess when you're talking about tunnels, you've got signals bouncing around and getting in each other's way and stuff. That makes sense.
Yep. Which I think 4G is much better at handling than 3G. But anyway, that's a whole different story. You're listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We're talking about technology and gadgets and consumer stuff. We'll be back with more in just a few moments.
This Joy program has a podcast and you can subscribe to it at joy.org.au/technogaze.
Yes, correct.
Nicely done.
I'm sure. I'm not going to try and do the same voice. So yeah.
Now you do realise that I'm going to have to include that ID in the in the podcast, because if I just start the podcast with /technogaze, actually, no, that's probably quite. That's just the start of your rant. Oh no, it's the end of the rant.
HTML
tags.
Okay.
Yes, this
rants,
is technogaze.
It is,
and it's 29 minutes to 1.
Correct.
And we've got Mark, Donna, Jono, and Michael in the studio.
Yes. If you would like to talk to us while we're in the studio, 0427JOY949, we'd like to know that we're loved.
Yes, we do.
In the silence here.
By more than our mother. Even that's a bit doubtful. My mother, that is. I don't know about yours.
Yes. Now, Sony have been in the news lately for all the wrong reasons in an attack that has, from all accounts, taken over the company's entire IT infrastructure.
Documents. Sony Pictures.
Sony Pictures.
Sony Pictures.
Yes. Okay. Documents with key passwords are now readily available, and managers are being told not to log into their network. Now, with the FBI formally declaring that North Korea is in fact behind the attack as of last night, they've declared that, we figured we'd give it a good run in today's show. Along with, of course, the coverage from SatMag earlier on and the news.
Oh, their coverage will not be anywhere near as in-depth as ours or as technically oriented. Oh.
So it's kind of interesting that this is the big news story for the end of 2014. It's been a year of security-related things. We had Heartbleed and Bash and Poodle and... That sounds just really weird, doesn't it? Heartbleed, Bash, Poodle.
So Heartbleed, of course, was the SSL vulnerability.
That's right.
Bash was Bash.
Bash was Bash.
It's a shell that you can use on Linux-based or Unix-based systems.
Including MacOS.
Yes. And what was the other one?
Poodle. Poodle. Which was another SSL-related-y thing.
Yeah, that was the Oracle over whatever it was called, yeah.
There was a big Drupal vulnerability.
Not Oracle software,
well.
Sorry. Mm-hmm.
There was a Drupal WordPress co-vulnerability where they worked together to get the patch out there. So I think I saw some kind of witty tweet saying this has kind of been like an endless security sprint year with various vulnerabilities and scrambling.
But I think there is a change coming, because the Poodles and the Bash things are all vulnerabilities in existing software that many, many organizations use. So it's basically saying, oh, there's an unlocked door, I'm going to go through the unlocked door, and I just don't know who's behind the door. So it's very random. Whereas Sony, and hopefully we have enough time to talk about Sands Casino, are both targeted attacks against organizations because we believe for very specific purposes.
Correct. Mm. Well, I mean, in some ways, the attack on, how is the attack on Sony different to, say, the WikiLeaks release of documents or Snowden's kind of release of documents?
Well, it comes down to motivation, doesn't it?
Right.
So apparently the news is, and this, is, of course, has been backed up by the FBI's announcement overnight, this movie Guardians of Peace, which has been produced by...
Interview.
The movie's called The Interview.
Guardians of Peace are the
the cracker group are calling themselves the Guardians of Peace.
Indeed. So The Interview, which... who's behind the interview?
Seth Rogen and James Franco, I believe.
Yes.
And it's supposed to be sort of a satirically amusing kind of a thing, but it basically sets out to assassinate the leader of a foreign nation.
The North Korean foreign leader, Kim Jong-un. in particular. And I think it sort of pokes fun at the whole regime.
Right.
It's very satirical.
And so one of the results of this is Sony said, well, we're going to, not Sony, but the distributor said, well, we're not going to screen the film because the Guardians of Peace put out a credible threat that they were going to attack cinemas that showed it. Mm. And some cinemas said that they would play Team America instead. someone decided that was probably not a good idea either.
Yeah, Paramount got in and said, no, don't show this. It's too risky as well. Yeah.
To that. And then apparently the President of the United States, Obama, has said, you know, within the past 24 hours or so, that he thinks it was a mistake to, you know, effectively
give in
to the terrorists' demands and, you know, and jeopardize our great freedom of speech, and we should go about our business and all this sort of stuff.
I just wonder what he would have been saying if they had gone ahead and some cinema got shut up or blown up again. And
Well, it is a corporate entity that's making this decision, isn't it? Or perhaps corporate entities, as opposed to a government deciding whether or not to bow to the quote demands, unquote, of this particular attack.
And I guess by President Obama's comments, you would probably guess that there probably was no discussion between Sony Pictures and the government to say, hey, should we or shouldn't we?
Well, he effectively said that. He said, I wish they'd spoken to me about before making this, you know, announcement.
What is he going to do? Send troops in to guard the Sony headquarters? I mean, you know, it's a cyber attack. But
this is the physical threat that if you cinemas out there are showing this movie, we will commit some terrorist acts. At those cinemas.
You know, it's really the next kind of step. I think the thing about the Sony one, which is perhaps makes this really stand out and why it's catching so much attention, is it's about stuff a lot of people pay attention to, whereas perhaps, you know, something like the diplomatic cables of WikiLeaks is perhaps not the sort of thing that catches the imagination of, you know, mass population as much.
Yeah.
You know, it is making people more aware of security issues, and maybe that's a good thing. I think Time.inc actually published a piece saying, you know, what are the things we can all learn from this? You know, pay attention to the way you use passwords. Don't open dodgy links in emails, you know, all of these kinds of things that, you know, people like us, we're kind of hyper aware of security issues and practices, but we all know, we all have friends and relatives who are a little bit lackadaisical in their use of passwords and security practice.
I think with Sony, there are also two elements to this. One is the fact that Sony was hacked. And Sony,
again,
because it's not the first time, hacked. And also Sony Pictures was threatened to say, don't show this movie, we don't want anyone to see it. That's element number one. Element number two is, as almost like a byproduct, they stole all of this corporate data and they made it available to anybody on the internet. So if you want to compare it to WikiLeaks, the question in my mind is, WikiLeaks was done because somebody out there said, hey, I think the public should know about this information because it is important to you as the public.
Correct.
The question is something like how much James Franco was paid for driving himself to the studio, is that in the public interest or not?
I would say no. No one needs to know a lot of the salacious details and gossip about celebrities' lives either, but it fills our media.
It does. Now, I think there was some positive side to it, because there was one stream that I read something about how women are not promoted, but the way that women are treated in terms of pay and everything else within the organisation, that probably is very important and something that should be discussed publicly.
Right, so that was the Jennifer Lawrence not being paid as much as her colleagues, which, you know, could be seen as an example of the systemic bias against women and that they do receive a lot less.
The other thing I want to point out here is it's, you know, compared to something like WikiLeaks, this is definitely a screw you Sony sort of thing, because it's not just the big celebrity stuff that was leaked. In more bad news for Sony, four separate ex-employees have now brought lawsuits against them because they failed to protect their data, which has now been leaked.
Go into that. Why Sony? Why poor old Sony getting this endless stream of attention from less savoury corners of the internet? Well,
aren't they angels?
Some suggestion that they may have brought this on themselves. If you can think back to 2005 and Sony's introduction of the root kit certainly caused some ruffled feathers back then, and some are suggesting that Sony's getting what it kind of deserved because it's always been this evil.
There's a hacker karma that's probably been served,
right?
As part of this, I suspect, at least in the back of people's minds because of that. Because we're talking about a root kit that was actually distributed on the CDs that
the music CDs
Sony would produce. Yep.
Mm. And this was a way to enforce their copyright on their product.
So that was the overt reason. It was to protect. It was digital rights management to protect the content on their CDs. But the root kit. Phoned home to Sony with a whole bunch of user data from machines that were running the rootkit and all untold numbers of dodgy things.
Do you think it could have been other virus hackers who were a little bit peeved off because Sony was interfering with their rootkits? Rootkit war?
Well, there was rootkit war. I mean, that's one of the things is that because Sony employed the rootkit, it then also opened back doors to all sorts of other dodgy things.
Yes. So it basically decrease security on your computers.
Correct.
And they wonder why people prefer to pirate the music instead. Mm. It's actually safer.
Mm. Now, Sony did issue a letter to media organisations who were basically broadcasting the information about this. As part of it, they said, you know, we expect you to destroy this and not to talk about it, but if you don't comply with this request, we'll have no choice but to hold you responsible for any damage or loss arising from such use or dissemination.
It always comes down to, whoops, we forgot to secure stuff, but it's all your fault for disseminating and doing your job.
Mm, exactly.
So the other issue was the Sands Casino...
Yes.
So breach? I think that, because it's interesting, that part of the news of Sony is that the underlying message here is that Sony have been pretty relaxed about their security measures, right?
Now,
juxtaposition of that.
Yeah, and you would think that a casino like Sands would have this huge security thing. Apparently, they had a review a couple of years ago that showed their security wasn't that good.
Right.
And they were in the process of improving it, but that wasn't going to come into effect till sometime towards the end of next year.
Oh.
So some hackers hacked into Sands in February, but we've only heard about it now because Sands were trying to keep it quiet.
So we're talking about Sands. It's a Las Vegas casino, which, you know...
It's a very large chain. They have casinos all over the world.
Right. Okay.
But this only affected their Las Vegas sites.
So one of the things about the Sands one is they're also claiming that it was Iranian hackers in this case who were somehow involved in this attack. And I don't know, it just seems a little bit convenient to me that it's North Korean hackers and Iranian hackers. And, you know, these are known kind of axis of evil type foreign powers. But, you know, I think isn't the reality that a lot of this stuff is actually done by, you know, Eastern Europeans and people who are not necessarily our scare quotes enemies. But the only ones that are getting this kind of attention is it's good to have a bogeyman, so let's blame the right bogeyman.
Look, it certainly is good to have somebody to blame, but in this case, the hackers left a specific message that shows that they had some sort of empathy towards Iran. Because what had happened about 4 months before the attack, the owner or the CEO of the Sands organization, a guy by the name of Elston, said that the way to basically rid Iran of their nuclear program is that they should be bombed. The hackers left a message that said, encouraging the use of weapons of mass destruction under any condition is a crime, signed the anti-WMD team. So there's obviously some affinity with it. And some other news I heard was that it wasn't the Iranian government who was actually sponsoring this. It was some hacktivists based inside Iran.
Right.
Probably with the knowledge of the Iranian government.
Well, this is the flip side, isn't there, is that there's I'm blanking on the name of it, but a U.S.
Stuxnet,
that's yes. Right. So state-sponsored hackery against Iran to stop the nuclear program.
Yeah,
right.
The nuclear enrichment, it was interfering with the enrichment machinery.
That's right. And that was meant to be a joint program between Israel and the U.S. So everybody's engaging it. China's engaging it as well.
But warfare.
But what we're seeing is now an attack on individual corporate entities as opposed to general ones.
Why target this casino? I mean, I can get the one against Sony because they were doing something against North Korea.
Because they didn't like what this guy said, what Adelson said Iran. And he's fairly influential in terms of U.S. politics and policy.
Sure. Yep. Fair enough.
It all comes down to motivation behind it, I guess, in the end. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we've got some more stuff to talk about technology-wise, including Microsoft starting to accept Bitcoin, and a few other little bits and pieces. We'll be back with that in a few moments.
TechnoGaze.
A quick shout-out to Jan. Thank you for your message, Jan, making the point that VicTrack, of course, we spoke about VicTrack and about the Melbourne Underground... or the City Loop getting 3G coverage. And a nice sort of connection back to our talk about fibre and NBN. VicTrack actually, according to Jan, has its own fibre network running along most of the train lines in Victoria.
Can we get the NBN on trains then?
Well, wouldn't that be a nice little... Like, do they compete with NBN Co on this? Like,
I don't know.
I'd imagine that would be a pretty valuable asset to have, I suspect.
I wonder what the laws are about publicly selling airspace or bandwidth for something like that.
Well, surely they could just offer it in the same way that NBN Co do.
NBN might have a monopoly, I'm not sure.
No. Interesting nonetheless. Food for thought. Now, we missed this last week. Microsoft.
Who are they?
Just a software company turned...
Startup, aren't they?
General services, yeah.
I think. There's like a name from the ages, from the dinosaurs. 90s
or 80s, yeah.
Wait, what?
Donna, you're looking so blank there. Now, they're taking Bitcoin to add credit to Microsoft wallets. Now, they're opening up payment methods for use on Windows, Windows Phone, Xbox games, and music and video, of course, which are their primary use of the Microsoft wallet. The option of paying with Bitcoin is a two-step process. You first need to redeem your Bitcoin into your wallet in order for it to become currency available to use elsewhere. And the system uses only an intermediary payment gateway called BitPay to perform the currency conversion, thereby insulating Microsoft from fluctuations in the exchange rate.
And what about the customers? Do they get insulated? I guess it depends what they buy Bitcoin at.
Well, apparently it's unlike making a payment with a credit card, you can't get a refund. So they're making it really clear to say, make sure you know what you're buying, know that you want it, and, you know, before you click yes, I want to do this transaction. Because unlike with a credit card, there's no going back and there's no refunds. Credit cards have got a whole lot of... protections built into them that you can actually go to your credit card provider, not even back to the person you're buying something from, and reverse the charge effectively. But there's none of that with Bitcoin because there's no, you know, there's no authority behind it.
Okay, so a credit card gives you protection because the seller that's taking your credit card details may be a fly-by-night and doesn't deliver on the goods. So if you can prove you don't have the goods, then they'll refund. I guess with Bitcoin, Microsoft, though, however, can do a refund. The question is, they probably can't do it through Bitcoin. They might have to do it out of band through normal currency.
Well, yeah, if they're offering the service to just essentially turn your Bitcoin into currency that's in your Microsoft wallet, then you'd obviously be able to maybe get a refund for What did I just say then? So obviously, maybe be able to. I don't know.
You're qualifying what you're about to say.
Yes. In not a very succinct way. The ability to refund for the services that you receive from Microsoft will obviously be available, you know, if you're the product you purchase through your Microsoft wallet isn't what it needs to be. You know, existing laws will still apply, but whether it can be transferred back into Bitcoin is another thing again. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like you've got to just give it a pool of money in your Microsoft wallet for
it. I wonder how big Bitcoin is becoming. I mean, it's been around for some years now. It was really just a very sort of secret geeky kind of thing that only hardcore geeks knew about. Then it kind of went through this, you know, high speculation, lots more people got involved and the prices started going through the roof. And now we're at this point where Microsoft is saying, hey, you can pay us with Bitcoin so you can spend more money in our network. Is this kind of a sign of the next step in the Bitcoin march? Is this an indication that there's a new level of legitimacy? You know, what does this, you know, Microsoft's a pretty important company. They're still obviously in the technology space, so would have been aware of its sort of rise. But the fact that they're adopting it, I think this is an interesting data point.
And what does it do for the culture of Bitcoin? We were just talking before the show about how Bitcoin's a bit, you know, anti-establishment sort of funky. And then, you know, what happens when it's becoming accepted by such a big evil corporation. And it's kind of like when your mum joins Twitter. You know, it just doesn't make it cool anymore.
Right. And I think that that's really a really interesting point, is that once it becomes something more mainstream, will that, you know, will that have an impact? Will that actually reduce the speculation and the volatility of it because it's becoming used by people who need to depend on it more?
It could actually be seen, and it's been reported as such in the press, that it's a way of Microsoft showing that they're more hip and happening than what they were before.
They're a bit late, though. They are
a bit late.
They do keep trying that, and it's a bit adorable.
Oh, aren't they cute? Yeah.
Actually, I really do think it's like your mother tweeting. You know, yeah. It is. Oh, isn't that? Yeah, well, isn't that nice?
They are embracing open standards or open source a bit more now.
It's true.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing about Bitcoin, if you strip away all of the hype and the geekiness about it, one of the underlying principles is that it's about peer-to-peer transactions. That it's not mediated through a big bank or through a national, what are those things, like a federal bank or a central, I'm blanking on the word again, it's one of
reserve.
Those days, thank you, central reserve, so that, you know, I can make a financial trade with you without a bank knowing about it, and therefore without a government knowing about it. And that's part of the, you know, part of the ethos behind Bitcoin and these alt currencies.
And I wouldn't be surprised that if a lot of that ethos and that desire is also driven out of the US, where there's a very strong libertarianism movement who says we don't want the government involved in anything.
That's
and,
right.
You know, Bitcoin has a number of users that are off into the, you know, netherworld that are doing shady deals. But I think there's
Silk Road.
Yeah. But there are a whole lot of other users there who say, oh, yeah, this is good. We want to use this technology. It's convenient to us. But I think there are a lot of other competing technologies that are coming up that, from a consumer point of view, is going to be much more attractive. Things like, you know, the Apple Pay or the Google Wallet and those type of solutions. But I hadn't considered your point earlier on about consumer protection. You're right. There is no consumer protection when you use Bitcoin.
Right. It's like using cash.
Yes.
Especially since none of the official agencies actually recognise it as currency yet.
Right. Well, really. And have actively said it's not currency. They want it to be treated like an asset. I mean, I think that's one of the other aspects, is one of the principles of Bitcoin, is that it is meant to be entirely like cash, that it gives you the opportunity to have an identity-less transaction. And, you know, obviously that's attractive to shady characters, but, you know, on the other side of the fence, you've got activists working against dodgy regimes also want to be able to, you know, make financial transactions without it compromising their safety.
Yes.
We should also point out, before people go rushing in to use their Bitcoins to buy Xbox Live games, it's currently limited to the United States, so we can't do it here.
As always.
Back here in the backwaters
of...
No, let them experiment with someone else first.
We've got more messages from on the topic of NBN and VicTrack and connectivity around the place. Greg has messaged in as well, pointing out that I think if you're in a cabled area, according to the new NBN, you won't... In fact, according to the previous version of the NBN. Is that what he's saying? I can't quite make sense of it. But if you've got cable, basically you don't get fibre.
Yeah, well, yes.
I think it's the message there. And another point he was making is that the electricity companies actually have, or electricity networks have fibre all over the place as well.
Well, that's right. And in fact, the organisation that I work for uses internet connection via fibre delivered by an energy company because they've got the infrastructure in place.
And, of course, thank you, Jan, again, for sending in a web address to what VicTrack are actually quite transparent about, how they can offer their services on, which is something that's available on
their
website.
I'm actually having a vague recollection that VicTrack, years and years and years ago, put out a tender for making there be free wireless on V-Rail lines. Literally like a decade or more ago.
Right.
I might have to dig into that.
Maybe
we should come back to this story.
We always will. You're listening to TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We're running out of time. It's 5 minutes to one. We'll wrap up the show in just a few moments.
TechnoGaze.
Toot toot. The train conductor is at the station, pointing us in the right direction, wanting to get the train moving. I think.
What was the name of the kids?
Wait, what?
What's the name of the kids show with the trains?
Thomas the Tank Engine.
The Fat Controller. I do like it when the guys in that run the trains, that drive the trains, actually refer to the guys at the control center as the Fat Controller over the PA speakers. That's amazing. Why
not? I've not heard that. I've missed out.
No,
clearly I don't travel on trains enough. That would be hilarious.
Glare.
Yeah.
Should all do that
on the Frankston line, especially. Now we're coming to the end of the show. Of course, it is the silly season, isn't it?
It is indeed the silly season.
And Donna, you've got a very bit of a quandary.
Yes, I actually want to crowdsource the knowledge of our listeners.
Yes.
Me and my partner have decided that we want to buy ourselves a gift this Christmas, a mutual gift, which is a games console. It's a long time since I've had a game console because I'm such an old lady. and now I've got the different quandary of which one to get. Now, I'm kind of a little bit opposed to Sony in some ways. So PlayStation is kind of off the menu. But of the game consoles that are out there, what should I get,
And of
fellow technogazers?
You're an open saucy kind of
I am an open saucy kind of a person. Yeah. Saucy? Saucy.
Are you a saucy lass?
A saucy, an open saucy lass.
Yes. So if you'd like to tweet us perhaps during the week, you can do so by tweeting us at Technogaze, TechnoGaze, and let us know which console Donna should get and why. What was
that awesome one you said, Jono?
The Ouya.
The Ouya, which is an open sourcey kind of a thing.
It's a little Android device you plug into your TV.
An Android-y device.
Mm. Ouya.
Ouya. Okay.
O-U-Y-A.
And what are the other contenders? There's a Nintendo thingy of some sort.
The Wii U.
The Wii U and
Xbox One.
Xbox.
Indeed. Now, that's all we have time for today. Don't look at me with such
my first show. It's over so soon.
If you missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing to joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is Cravings, of course, with Pete Dillon, followed by Fender Bender. Then Critical Hit for some more gaming stuff. So perhaps we should tune in.
Maybe you should call in and ask them.
Of course, there'll be a Joy News Bulletin very shortly as well. Thank you, Donna, for coming in.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Jono, for joining us for the first time.
Thank you much, Lee.
And thank you, Michael, for pushing buttons.
Thank you.
We'll catch you next week. Have a good weekend and be safe.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.